his fake mustache drooped limply, threatening to fall off.
"Don't try to reason with him," Daishi warned, pulling his men from the room. "He's insane!"
"No, I don't think he is," Raiden said, studying Ainden's eyes. "This man is not insane. Just confused." Ainden blinked a few times, his hands growing tense on the axe handle. Raiden searched desperately for a solution, and his eyes fell on the remnants of a large stone table near the center of the room. Gritting his teeth and muttering a silent prayer to Domai, Raiden stood and walked into the building. Kairita gasped behind him, and Galadin cursed. The roof moaned ominously. Raiden looked at Ainden, who stood with the axe, prepared to swing. His eyes followed Raiden into the center of the room.
"I'm right, am I not?
You aren't mad. I heard you babbling insanely at your court, but anyone can babble. An insane man doesn't think to boil parchment for food, and a madman doesn't have the foresight to plan a trap."
"I am not Tayain," Ainden finally said. "I am Ainden, Baron of Elantris."
"If you wish," Raiden said, taking the remnants of his sleeve and wiping it against the top of the fallen table. "Though I can't imagine why you would rather be Ainden than Tayain. This is, after all, Elantris."
"I know that," Ainden snapped.
No matter what Raiden had said, this man wasn't completely stable. The axe could fall at any moment.
"Do you?" Raiden asked.
"Do you really understand what it means to live in Elantris, the city of the gods?" He turned toward the table, still wiping, his back to Ainden. "Elantris, city of beauty, city of art, and city of sculpture." He stepped back, revealing the now clean tabletop. It was covered with intricate carvings, just like the walls of the chapel. Ainden's eyes opened wide, the axe drooping in his hand.
"This city is a stone carver's dream, Tayain," Raiden said.
"How many artists did you hear on the outside complain about the lost beauty of Elantris? These buildings are amazing monuments to the art of sculpture. I want to know who, when faced with such opportunity, would choose to be Ainden the Baron instead of Tayain the Sculptor." The axe clanged to the ground. Ainden's face was stunned. "Look at the wall next to you, Tayain," Raiden said quietly. The man turned, his fingers brushing against a relief hidden in slime. His sleeve came up, his arm quivering as he buffed away the slime.
"Merciful Domai," he whispered. "It's beautiful."
"Think of the opportunity, Tayain," Raiden said. "Only you, out of all the sculptors in the world, can see Elantris. Only you can experience its beauty and learn from its masters. You are the luckiest man in Opilon." A trembling hand ripped the mustache away.
"And I would have destroyed it," he mumbled. "I would have knocked it down."
With that, Ainden bowed his head and collapsed in a crying heap. Raiden exhaled thankfully, then noticed that the danger wasn't over. Ainden's squad of men was armed with stones and steel rods. Daishi and his people entered the room again, convinced that it wasn't going to collapse on them anytime soon. Raiden stood directly between the two groups.
"Stop!" he commanded, raising an arm at each one.
They halted, but warily.
"What are you people doing?" Raoden demanded. Hasn't Tayane's realization taught you anything?
Step aside, spirit, Daishi warned, hefting his sword. I will not, Raoden said. I asked you a question. Did you learn nothing from what just happened?
We aren't sculptors, Daishi said.
That doesn't matter, Raoden replied. Don't you understand the opportunity you have living in Elantris? We have a chance here that no one outside can ever achieve. We are free!
Free?
Scoffed someone from Aeyndon's group.
Yes, free, Raoden said. For eternity, man has struggled just to fill his mouth. Food is life's one desperate pursuit, the first and the last thought of carnal minds. Before a person can dream, he must eat. And before he can love, he must fill his stomach. But we are different. At the price of a little hunger, we can be loosed from the bonds that have held every living thing since time began. Weapons lowered slightly, though Raoden couldn't be certain if they were considering his words or just confused by them.
Why fight? Raoden asked. Why worry about killing? Outside, they fight for wealth. Wealth that is ultimately used to buy food. They fight for land, land to raise food. Eating is the source of all struggle. But we have no needs. Our bodies are cold. We barely need clothing or shelter to warm us. And they continue on, even when we don't eat. It's amazing. The groups still eyed each other warily. Philosophic debate wasn't a match for the sight of their enemies. Those weapons in your hands, Raoden said. Those belong to the outside world. They have no purpose in Elantris. Titles and class, those are ideas for another place. Listen to me. There are so few of us that we can't afford to lose a single one of you. Is it really worth it? An eternity of pain in exchange for a few moments of released hatred? Raoden's words echoed through the silent room. Finally, a voice broke the tension.
I will join you, Tayane said, rising to his feet.
His voice wavered slightly, but his face was resolute.
I thought I had to be mad to live in Elantris, but madness was what kept me from seeing the beauty. Put down your weapons, men.
They balked at the order.
I said put them down.
Tayane's voice grew firm, his short, large-bellied form suddenly commanding.
I still lead here.
Baron Aeyndon ruled us, one of the men said.
Aeyndon was a fool, Tayane said with a sigh, and so was anyone who followed him. Listen to this man. There is more royalty in his argument than there ever was in my pretend court.
Give up your anger, Raoden pled, and let me give you hope instead. A clank sounded behind him. Daishi's sword falling to the stones.
I cannot kill today, he decided, turning to leave.
His men regarded Aeyndon's group for a moment, then joined their leader. The sword sat abandoned in the center of the room. Aeyndon, Tayane, smiled at Raoden.
Whoever you are, thank you.
Come with me, Tayane, Raoden said. There is a building you should see. Chapter 17. Serene strode into the palace dance hall, a long black bag on her shoulder. There were several gasps from the women inside.
What? She asked.
It's your clothing, dear, Deora finally answered.
These women aren't accustomed to such things.
It looks like men's clothing,
Siaden exclaimed, her double chin jiggling indignantly. Serene looked down at her gray jumpsuit with surprise, then back at the collected women.
Well, you didn't really expect us to fight in dresses, did you?
However, after studying the women's faces, she realized that was exactly what they had expected.
You have a long way to go here, cousin, Lucal warned quietly, entering behind her and taking a seat on the far side of the room.
Lucal? Serene asked. What are you doing here?
I fully expect this to be the most entertaining experience of the week, he said, reclining in his chair and putting his hands behind his head.
I wouldn't miss it for all the gold in Weirn's coffers.
Me too, Kaeis's voice declared.
The small girl pushed her way past Serene and scuttled toward the chairs. Daorn, however, darted in from the side and hopped into Kaeis's chosen seat. Kaeis stamped her foot with pique, then, realizing that every chair along the wall was exactly the same, chose another.
I'm sorry, Lucal said with an embarrassed shrug. I was stuck with them.
Be nice to your siblings, dear, Deora chided.
Yes, mother, Lucal responded immediately.
Slightly put off by the sudden audience, Serene turned to her prospective students. Every woman from the embroidery circle had come. Even the stately Deora, and the equally scatterbrained Queen Isheen. Serene's clothing and actions might have mortified them, but their hunger for independence was greater than their indignation. Serene allowed the bag to slide off her shoulder and into her hands. One side opened with some snaps, and she reached inside to whip out one of her practice swords. The long, thin blade made a slight metallic scrape as she pulled it free, and the collected women shied away.
This is a Syrie, Serene said, making a few slices in the air. It's also called a Khmer or a Jadaver, depending on which country you're in. The swords were first crafted in Yador as light weapons for scouts, but they fell into disuse after only a few decades. Then, however, the swords were adopted by Yadorian nobility, who favored them for their grace and delicacy. Duels are common in Yador, and the quick, neat style of Syrie fencing requires a great deal of skill. She punctuated her sentences with a few thrusts and swipes, mostly moves she would never use in a real fight, but ones that looked good nonetheless. The women were captivated. The doulas were the first ones to turn fencing into a sport, rather than a means of killing the man who had decided to woo the same woman as yourself, Serene continued. They placed this little knob on the tip and dulled the blade's edge. The sport soon became quite popular amongst the Republicans. Doula neutrality usually kept the country out of war, and so a form of fighting that didn't have martial applications appealed to them. Along with the dulled edge and tip, they added rules that forbid the striking of certain body parts. Fencing skipped Aerilon, where the Elantrians frowned upon anything resembling combat, but was very well received in Teode, with one notable change. It became a woman's sport. The Teoish men prefer more physical contests, such as jousting or broadsword fencing. For a woman, however, the Syrie is perfect. The light blade allows us to make full use of our dexterity and, she added, eyeing Lucal with a smile, allows us to capitalize on our superior intelligence. With that, Serene whipped out her second blade and tossed it to the young Torina, who stood at the front of the group. The reddish-gold-haired girl caught the sword with a confused look. Defend yourself, Serene warned, raising her blade and falling into an attack stance. Torina brought up the Sairi clumsily, trying to imitate Serene's posture. As soon as Serene attacked, Torina abandoned the stance with a yelp of surprise, swinging her Sairi in wild, two-handed sweeps. Serene easily batted the girl's sword away and placed a thrust directly between her breasts. "You're dead," Serene informed her. "Fencing does not depend on strength. It requires skill and precision. Only use one hand. You'll have better control and reach that way. Turn your body a little to the side. It allows for a greater lunging distance and makes you more difficult to hit." As she spoke, Serene brought out a bundle of thin sticks she'd had made earlier. They were, of course, poor substitutes for a real sword, but they would do until the armorer finished the practice sairis. After each woman received a weapon, Serene began to teach them how to lunge. It was difficult work, much more difficult than Serene had expected. She considered herself a decent fencer, but it had never occurred to her that having knowledge was entirely different from explaining that knowledge to others. The women seemed to find ways to hold their weapons that Serene would have thought physically impossible. They thrust wildly, were frightened of oncoming blades, and tripped over their dresses. Eventually, Serene left them to practice their thrusts. She wouldn't trust them to spar with one another until they had proper face masks and clothing, and seated herself beside Lucal with a sigh. "Exhausting work, cousin?" he asked, obviously enjoying the sight of his mother trying to wield a sword in a dress. "You have no idea," Serene said, wiping her brow. "Are you sure you don't want to give it a try?" Lucal raised his hands. "I may be flamboyant at times, cousin, but I'm not stupid. King Iodin would blacklist any man who took part in such a supposedly demeaning activity. Being on the king's bad side is fine if you happen to be Eondel, but I'm just a simple merchant. I can't afford royal displeasure." "I'm sure," Serene said, watching the women trying to master their lunges. "I don't think I taught them very well."
"Better than I could have done," Lucal said with a shrug.
"I could have done better," Kaeys informed from her seat. The little girl was obviously growing bored with the repetitious fighting.
"Oh, really?" Lucal asked dryly.
"Of course. She didn't teach them about riposting or proper form, and she didn't even bother with tournament rules."
Serene raised an eyebrow. "You know about fencing?"
"I read a book on it," Kaeys said airily. Then she reached over to slap away Deorn's hand, which was poking her with a stick he had taken from Serene's pile.
"The sad thing is she probably did," Lucal said with a sigh, "just so she could try and impress you."
"I think Kaeys must be the most intelligent little girl I've ever met," Serene confessed.
Lucal shrugged. "She's smart, but don't let her impress you too much. She's still only a child. She may comprehend like a woman, but she still reacts like a little girl."
"I still think she's astounding," Serene said, watching as the two children played.
"Oh, she's that," Lucal agreed. "It only takes Kaeys a few hours to devour a book, and her language learning ability is unreal. I feel sorry for Deorn sometimes. He tries his best, but I think he just feels inadequate. Kaeys can be domineering, if you haven't noticed. But smart or not, they're still children, and they're still a pain to take care of."
Serene watched the children playing. Kaeys, having stolen the stick from her brother, was proceeding to chase him around the room, cutting and thrusting and parodies of the method Serene had taught. As Serene watched, her eyes fell on the doorway. It was open, and two figures watched the women practice. The ladies fell still as Lords Eondel and Shuden, realizing they had been noticed, slipped into the room. The two men, though very different in age, were reportedly becoming good friends. Both were something of outsiders in Eirilan. Shuden, a foreigner with dark skin, and Eondel, a former soldier whose very presence seemed to offend. If Eondel's presence was distasteful to the women, however, Shuden's more than made up for it. A serious wave of blushing ran through the fencers as they realized that the handsome Jindoese lord had been watching them. Several of the younger girls clutched friends' arms for support, whispering excitedly. Shuden himself flushed at the attention. Eondel, however, ignored the women's reactions. He walked among the would-be fencers, his eyes contemplative. Finally, he picked up a spare length of wood and stepped into a fencing posture and began a series of swipes and thrusts. After testing the weapon, he nodded to himself, set it aside, then moved toward one of the women. "Hold the wood like so," he instructed, positioning her fingers. "You were gripping it so tightly, you lost flexibility. Now place your thumb along the top of the hilt to keep it pointed in the right direction. Step back and thrust." The woman, Eitera, complied, flustered that Eondel had dared touch her wrist. Her thrust, amazingly, was straight and well-aimed, a fact that surprised no one more than Eitera herself. Eondel moved through the group, carefully correcting posture, grip, and stance. He took each woman in turn, giving advice to their several individual problems. After just a few brief minutes of instruction, the women's attacks were more focused and accurate than Serene would have thought possible. Eondel backed away from the women with a satisfied eye. "I hope you aren't offended by my intrusion, Your Highness." "Not at all, my lord," Serene assured him, even though she did feel a stab of jealousy. She had to be woman enough to recognize superior skill when she saw it, she told herself. "You are obviously talented," the older man said, "but you seem to have had little experience in training others." Serene nodded. Eondel was a military commander. He had probably spent decades instructing novices in the basics of fighting. "You know quite a bit about fencing, my lord." "It interests me," Eondel said, "and I have visited Dúladel on numerous occasions. The Dulas refuse to recognize a man's fighting ability unless he can fence, no matter how many battles he has won." Serene stood, reaching over and pulling out her practice sires. "Care to spar, then, my lord?" she asked offhandedly, testing one of the blades in her hand. Eondel looked surprised. I have never sparred with a woman before, Your Highness. I don't think it would be proper." "Nonsense," she said, tossing him a sword. "Defend yourself." Then, without giving him another chance to object, she attacked. Eondel stumbled at first, taken aback by her sudden offense. However, his warrior training soon took control, and he began to parry Serene's attack with amazing skill. From what he'd said, Serene had assumed that his knowledge of fencing would be cursory. She was mistaken. Eondel threw himself into the bout with determination. His blade whipped through the air so quickly, it was impossible to follow, and only years of training and drills told Serene where to parry. The room rang with the sound of metal against metal, and the women paused to gawk as their two instructors moved across the floor, engaged in intense battle. Serene wasn't used to sparring with someone as good as Eondel. Not only was he as tall as she was, negating any advantage she had in reach, he had the reflexes and training of a man who had spent his entire life fighting. The two of them pushed through the crowd, using women, chairs, and other random objects as foils for the other's attack. Their swords cracked and whipped, lunging out and then snapping back to block. Eondel was too good for her. She could hold him, but was so busy with defense that she had no time to attack. With sweat streaming down her face, Serene became acutely aware that everyone in the room was watching her. At that moment, something changed in Eondel. His stance weakened slightly, and Serene struck reflexively. Her round-tipped blade slipped past his defenses and came up against his neck. Eondel smiled slightly.
"I have no choice but to yield, my lady," Eondel said.
Suddenly, Serene felt very ashamed for putting Eondel in a situation where he had obviously let her win, lest he make her look bad in front of the others. Eondel bowed, and Serene was left feeling silly. They walked back to the side of the room, accepting cups from Lucal, who complimented them on the performance. As Serene drank, something struck her. She had been treating her time here in Aerilon like a contest, as she did with most political endeavors, a complex yet enjoyable game. Aerilon was different. Eondel had let her win because he wanted to protect her image. To him, it was no game. Aerilon was his nation, his people, and he would make any sacrifice in order to protect them. "This time is different, Serene. If you fail, you won't lose a trade contract or building rights. You'll lose lives, the lives of real people." The thought was sobering. Eondel regarded his cup, eyebrows raised skeptically.
"It's only water?" he asked, turning to Serene.
"Water is good for you, my lord."
"I'm not so sure about that," Eondel said. "Where did you get it?"
"I had it boiled and then poured between two buckets to restore its flavor," Serene said. "I wasn't going to have the women falling over each other in drunken stupors while they tried to practice."
"Aerilish wine isn't that strong, cousin," Lucal pointed out.
"It's strong enough," Serene replied. "Drink up, Lord Eondel. We wouldn't want you to get dehydrated." Eondel complied, though he maintained his look of dissatisfaction. Serene turned back toward her students, intending to order them to their practicing. However, their attention had been captured by something else. Lord Shudin stood near the back of the room. His eyes were closed as he moved slowly through a delicate set of motions. His taut muscles rippled as his hands spun in controlled loops, his body flowing in response. Even though his motions were slow and precise, there was sweat glistening on his skin. It was like a dance. Shudin took long steps, legs rising high in the air, toes pointed, before placing them on the floor. His arms were always moving, his muscles stretched tightly, as if he were struggling against some unseen force. Slowly, Shudin accelerated. As if building in tension, Shudin swept faster and faster, his steps becoming leaps, his arms whipping. The women watched in silence, their eyes wide, more than one jaw gaping open. The only sounds came from the wind of Shudin's moves and the thumping of his feet. He stopped suddenly, landing in a final jump, feet pounding to the ground in unison, arms outspread, hands flat. He folded his arms inward like two heavy gates swinging shut. Then he bowed his head and exhaled deeply. Serene let the moment hang before mumbling, "Merciful Domai. Now I'll never get them to focus." Eondel chuckled quietly.
"Shudin's an interesting lad. He complains repeatedly about the way women chase him, but he can't resist the urge to show off.
Despite it all, he's still a man, and he's still rather young.
Serene nodded as Shuden completed his ritual, then turned sheepishly as he realized how much attention he had drawn. He quickly wove his way through the women with downcast eyes, joining Serene and Eondel.
"That was unexpected," Serene said, as Shuden accepted a cup of water from Lucal.
"I apologize, Lady Serene," he replied between gulps. "Your sparring made me want to exercise. I thought everyone would be so busy practicing that they wouldn't notice me."
"Women always notice you, my friend," Eondel said with a shake of his gray-streaked head. "Next time you complain about being mauled by adoring women, I'll point out this little fiasco."
Shuden bowed his head in acquiescence, blushing again.
"What was that exercise?" Serene asked curiously. "I've never seen anything like it."
"We call it Cheishan," Shuden explained. "It's a kind of warm-up, a way to focus your mind and body when preparing for a battle."
"It's impressive," Lucal said.
"I'm just an amateur," Shuden said with a modestly bowed head. "I lack speed and focus. There are men in Jindo who can move so quickly you grow dizzy watching them."
"All right, ladies," Serene declared, turning to the women, most of whom were still staring at Shuden. "Thank Lord Shuden for his exhibition later. Right now, you have some lunges to practice. Don't think I'm going to let you leave after just a few minutes of work." There were several groans of complaint as Serene took up her sayri and began the practice session anew.
"They'll all be devilishly sore tomorrow," Serene said with a smile.
"You say that with such passion, my lady, that one is inclined to think you're enjoying the prospect."
Aishi throbbed slightly as he spoke.
"It will be good for them," Serene said. "Most of those women are so pampered that they've never felt anything more serious than the prick of a stitching needle."
"I'm sorry I missed the practice," Aishi said. "I haven't watched a Cheishan in decades."
"You've seen one before?"
"I've seen many things, my lady," Aishi replied. "A Sion's life is very long."
Serene nodded. They walked down a street in Kei, the enormous wall of Elantris looming in the background. Dozens of street vendors offered their wares eagerly as she passed, recognizing from her dress that she was a member of the court. Kei existed to support the Aerilish nobility, and it catered to very pompous tastes. Gold-plated cups, exotic spices, and extravagant clothes all vied for her attention, though most of it just made her feel sick to her stomach. From what she understood, these merchants were the only real middle class left in Aerilon. In Kei, they competed for King Iodin's favor, and hopefully a title, usually at the expense of their competitors, a few peasants, and their dignity. Aerilon was quickly becoming a nation of fervent, even terrified commercialism. Success no longer brought just wealth, and failure no longer just poverty. Income determined just how close one was to being sold into virtual slavery. Serene waved off the merchants, though her efforts did little to discourage them. She was relieved to finally turn a corner and see the Karathi Chapel. She resisted the urge to sprint the rest of the way, keeping her pace steady, until she reached the doors to the broad building and slipped in. She dropped a few coins, nearly the last of the money she had brought with her from Teode, into the donations box, then went looking for the priest. The chapel felt comfortable to Serene. Unlike Durethai chapels, which were austere and formal, hung with shields, spears, and the occasional tapestry, Karathi chapels were more relaxed. A few quilts hung on the walls, probably donations from elderly patrons.
and flowers and plants sat lined up beneath them, their buds peeking out in the spring weather. The ceiling was low and unvaulted, but the windows were broad and wide enough to keep the building from feeling cramped. "Hello, child," a voice said from the side of the room. Omine, the priest, was standing next to one of the far windows, looking out at the city. "Hello, Father Omine," Serene said with a curtsy. "Am I bothering you?" "Of course not, child," Omine said, waving her over. "Come, how have you been? I missed you at the sermon last night." "I'm sorry, Father Omine," Serene said with a slight flush. "There was a ball I had to attend." "Ah, do not feel guilty, child. Socializing is not to be underestimated, especially when one is new in town." Serene smiled, walking between a set of pews to join the short priest next to the window. His small stature wasn't usually so noticeable. Omine had constructed a podium at the front of the chapel to fit his size, and while he gave sermons, it was hard to distinguish his height. Standing next to the man, however, Serene couldn't help feeling that she was towering over him. He was terribly short, even for an Aireline, the top of his head barely reaching her chest. "You are troubled by something, child?" Omine asked. He was mostly bald and wore a loose-fitting robe tied at the waist with a white sash. Other than his strikingly blue eyes, the only color on his body was a jade Karathi pendant at his neck, carved in the shape of Aeon Omai. He was a good man, something Serene couldn't say about everyone, even priests. There were several back in Teod who absolutely infuriated her. Omine, however, was thoughtful and fatherly, even if he did have an annoying habit of letting his thoughts drift. He sometimes got so distracted that minutes would pass without his realizing someone was waiting for him to speak. "I wasn't sure who else to ask, Father," Serene said. "I need to do a widow's trial, but no one will explain what it is." "Ah," Omine said, with a nod of his shiny, hairless head. "That would be confusing for a newcomer. Why won't anyone explain it to me?" "It is a semi-religious ceremony, left over from days when the Elantrians ruled," Omine explained. "Anything involving the city is a taboo topic in Aerilan, especially for the faithful." "Well, then how am I going to learn what is expected of me?" Serene asked with exasperation. "Do not get frustrated, child," Omine said soothingly. "It is taboo, but only by custom, not by doctrine. I don't think Domai would have any objection to my assuaging your curiosity." "Thank you, Father," Serene said with a sigh of relief. "Since your husband died," Omine explained, "you are expected to show your grief openly. Otherwise, the people won't think you loved him." "But I didn't love him, not really. I didn't even know him." "Nonetheless, it would be proper for you to do a trial. The severity of a widow's trial is an expression of how important she thought her union, and how much she respected her husband. To go without one, even for an outsider, could be a bad sign." "But wasn't it a pagan ritual?" "Not really," Omine said with a shake of his head. "The Elantrians started it, but it had nothing to do with their religion. It was simply an act of kindness that developed into a benevolent and worthy tradition." Serene raised her eyebrows. "Honestly, I am surprised to hear you speak that way about the Elantrians, Father." Omine's eyes sparkled. "Just because the Direthi Artiths hated the Elantrians doesn't mean that Domai did, child. I do not believe they were gods, and many of them had inflated opinions of their own majesty. But I had a number of friends in their ranks. The Sheod took men, both good and bad, selfish and selfless. Some of the most noble men I ever knew lived in that city. I was very sorry to see what happened to them. Serene paused. Was it Domai, father? Did he curse them, as they say?
Everything happens according to Domai's will, child, Omain answered. However, I do not think that curse is the right word. At times, Domai sees fit to send disasters upon the world. Other times he will give the most innocent of children a deadly disease. These are no more curses than what happened to Elantris. They are simply the workings of the world. All things must progress, and progression is not always a steady incline. Sometimes we must fall, sometimes we will rise. Some must be hurt, while others have fortune. For that is the only way we can learn to rely on one another. As one is blessed, it is his privilege to help those whose lives are not as easy. Unity comes from strife, child. Serene paused. So you don't think the Elantrians, what's left of them, are devils? Sfracus, as the Fjordels call them? Omain asked with amusement. No, though I hear that is what this new Yorn teaches. I fear his pronouncements will only bring hatred. Serene tapped her cheek in thought. That may be what he wants. What purpose could that accomplish? I don't know, Serene admitted. Omain shook his head again. I cannot believe any follower of God, even a Yorn, would do such a thing. He took on an abstracted look as he considered the prospect, a slight frown on his face. Father? Serene asked. Father? At the second prod, Omain shook his head, as if startled to realize she was still there. I'm sorry, child. What were we discussing? You never finished telling me what a widow's trial was, she reminded. Tangents were all too frequent when one was speaking with the diminutive priest. Ah, yes, the widow's trial. Put simply, child, you are expected to do some favor for the country. The more you loved your husband, and the more lofty your station, the more extravagant your trial is supposed to be. Most women give food or clothing to the peasantry. The more personal your involvement, the better the impression you give. The trial is a method of service, a means of bringing humility to the exalted. But where will I get the money? She hadn't decided just how to go about asking her new father for a stipend. Money? Omain asked with surprise. Why? You're one of the richest people in Erilon. Didn't you know that? What? You inherited Prince Raodin's estate, child, Omain explained. He was a very wealthy man. His father made sure of that. Under King Iodin's government, it would not be good for the crown prince to be any less rich than a duke. By the same token, it would be a source of extreme embarrassment to him if his daughter-in-law weren't fabulously wealthy. All you need to do is speak to the royal treasurer, and I'm certain he will take care of you. Thank you, father, Serene said, giving the little man a fond hug. I have work to do. Your visit was welcome, child, Omain said, looking back at the city with contemplative eyes. That is what I am here for. However, she could tell that soon after making the comment, he had already forgotten her presence. Traveling once again, the long roads within his mind. Aishi waited for her outside, hovering beside the door with characteristic patience.
I don't see why you're so worried, Serene said to him. Omine liked Elantris. He wouldn't have anything against your entering his chapel.
Aishi pulsed slightly. He hadn't entered a Karathi chapel since the day, many years ago, when Sianilin, the patriarch of Shu-Korath, had thrown him out of one.
It is all right, my lady, Aishi said. I have a feeling that no matter what the priests may say, both of us will be happier if we stay out of one another's sight.
I disagree, Serene said, but I don't want to argue it.
Did you hear anything of our conversation?
Sions have very good ears, my lady.
You don't have ears at all, she pointed out. What do you think?
It sounds like a good way for my lady to gain some notoriety in the city.
My thought exactly.
One other thing, my lady. You two spoke of the Durethai Yorn and Elantris. The other night, when I was inspecting the city, I noticed the Yorn Raithan walking the city wall of Elantris. I have gone back several nights now, and have found him there on a couple of occasions. He appears quite friendly with the captain of the Elantris City Guard.
What is he trying to do with that city? Serene said, frustrated.
It baffles me as well, my lady.
Serene frowned, trying to piece together what she knew of the Yorn's actions and Elantris. She could make no connections. However, as she thought, something else occurred to her. Perhaps she could solve one of her other problems, and inconvenience the Yorn at the same time.
Maybe I don't need to know what he is doing to block him, she said.
It would certainly help, my lady.
I don't have that luxury. But we do know this. If the Yorn wants the people to hate the Elantrians, then it is my job to see the opposite happen.
Aishi paused.
What are you planning, my lady?
You'll see, she said with a smile.
First, let's get back to my rooms. I've wanted to speak with Father for some time now.
Ean? I'm glad you called. I've been worried about you.
Evan Teo's glowing head hovered before her.
You could have sent for me at any time, Father, Serene said.
I didn't want to intrude, honey. I know how you value your independence.
Independence is second to duty right now, Father, Serene said. Nations are falling. We don't have time to worry about one another's feelings.
I stand corrected, her father said with a chuckle.
What is happening in Teod, Father?
It isn't good,
Evan Teo warned, his voice growing uncharacteristically somber.
These are dangerous times. I just had to put down another Jaskari mystery cult. They always seem to spring up when an eclipse is near.
Serene shivered. The mystery cultists were an odd bunch, one her father didn't like to deal with. There was reservation in his voice, however. Something else was bothering him.
There's more, isn't there?
I'm afraid there is, Ean, her father admitted. Something worse.
What?
You know Ashgress, the Fjordal ambassador.
Yes, Serene said with a frown. What has he done? Denounced you in public?
No. Something worse.
Her father's face looked troubled.
He left.
Left? The country? After all the trouble Fjordan went through to get representatives back in?
That's right, Ean, Evan Teo said. He took his entire entourage, made a last speech on the docks, and left us behind. There was a disturbing air of finality about the event.
This isn't good, Serene agreed. Fjordan had been dogmatic about keeping a presence in Teod. If Ashgress had left, he had gone in response to a personal command from Wyrn.
It smelled of their having given up on Teod for good.
"I'm scared, Ean."
The words chilled her, like nothing else. Her father was the strongest man she knew. "You shouldn't say things like that."
"Only to you, Ean," Eventio said. "I want you to understand how serious the situation is."
"I know," Serene said. "I understand. There's a Yorn here in Kei." Her father muttered a few curses she had never heard him speak before. "I think I can handle him, father," Serene said quickly. "We're keeping our eyes on one another."
"Which one is it?"
"His name is Raythan." Her father cursed again, this time even more vehemently.
"Eidos Domai, Serene! Do you know who that is? Raythan was the Yorn assigned to Duladan the 6 months before it collapsed."
"I guessed that was who he was."
"I want you out of there, Serene," Eventio said. "That man is dangerous. Do you know how many people died in the Duladan Revolution? There were tens of thousands of casualties."
"I know, father."
"I'm sending a ship for you. We'll make our stand back here, where no Yorn is welcome."
"I'm not leaving, father," Serene said resolutely.
"Serene, be logical."
Eventio's voice took on the quiet, prodding tone it did every time he wanted her to do something. He usually got his way. He was one of the few who knew how to sway her.
"Everyone knows the Aerilish government is a mess. If this Yorn toppled Duladan, then he'll have no trouble doing the same to Aerilon. You can't hope to stop him when the entire country is against you."
"I have to stay, father, regardless of the situation."
"What loyalty do you owe them, Serene?" Eventio pled. "A husband you never knew? A people who are not your own?"
"I am the daughter of their king."
"You are the daughter of a king here as well. What is the difference? Here, the people know and respect you."
"They know me, father, but respect?" Serene sat back, beginning to feel sick. The old feelings were returning. The feelings that had made her willing to leave her homeland in the first place, abandoning all she knew in favor of a foreign land.
"I don't understand, Ean."
Her father's voice was pained. Serene sighed, closing her eyes. "Oh, father, you could never see it. To you I was a delight, your beautiful, intelligent daughter. No one would dare tell you what they really thought of me."
"What are you talking about?"
he demanded, now speaking with the voice of a king. "Father," Serene said, "I am 25 years old, and I am blunt, conniving, and oft-times offensive. You must have noticed that no man ever sought my hand." Her father didn't respond for a moment.
"I thought about it,"
he finally admitted. "I was the king's spinster daughter, a shrew no one wanted to touch," Serene said, trying and failing to keep the bitterness out of her voice. "Men laughed at me behind my back. No one would dare approach me with romantic intentions, for it was well known that whoever did would be mocked by his peers."
"I just thought you were independent, that you didn't consider any of them worthy of your time."
Serene laughed wryly. "You love me, father. No parent wants to admit that his daughter is unattractive. The truth of the matter is, no man wants an intelligent wife."
"That isn't true,"
her father objected immediately.
"Your mother is brilliant."
"You are an exception, father, which is why you can't see it. A strong woman is not an asset in this world, not even in Teod, which I always claim is so much more advanced than the continent.
It really isn't all that different, Father. They say they give their women more freedom, but there's still the impression that the freedom was theirs to give in the first place. In Teode, I am an unmarried daughter. Here in Aerilon, I am a widowed wife. That is an enormous distinction. As much as I love Teode, I would have to live with the constant knowledge that no one wants me. Here, at least, I can try to convince myself that someone was willing to have me, even if it was for political reasons.
We can find you someone else.
I don't think so, Father, Serene said with a shake of her head, sitting back in her chair. Now that Teon has children, no husband of mine would end up on the throne, which is the only reason anyone in Teode would consider marrying me. No one under Dorethi control will consider marriage with a Teo. That only leaves Aerilon, where my betrothal contract forbids me from marrying again. No, there is no one for me now, Father. The best I can do is make use of my situation here. At least I can command a measure of respect in Aerilon, without having to worry about how my actions will affect my future marriageability.
I see,
her father said. She could hear the displeasure in his voice. Father, do I need to remind you not to worry about me? She asked. We have much larger problems to deal with.
I can't help worrying about you, Lecky Stick. You're my only daughter.
Serene shook her head, determined to change the topic before she started crying. Suddenly, very ashamed for destroying his idyllic vision of her, Serene searched for anything she could say that would divert the conversation. Uncle Kyine is here in K.E. That did it. She heard an intake of breath from the other side of the Sion Bond.
Do not mention his name to me, Ean.
But...
No.
Serene sighed. All right, then. Tell me about Fjordan instead. What do you think Wyrn is planning?
This time, I really have no idea,
Ebentio said, allowing himself to be diverted.
It must be something massive. Borders are closing to Teoish merchants north and south, and our ambassadors are beginning to disappear. I am very close to calling them home.
And your spies?
Are vanishing almost as quickly, her father said. I haven't been able to get anyone into the Velding in over a month, and Domai only knows what Wyrn and the Yorns are scheming in there. Sending spies to Fjordan these days is almost the same as sending them to die.
But you do it anyway, Serene said quietly, understanding the source of the pain in her father's voice.
I have to. What we find could end up saving thousands, though that doesn't make it any easier. I just wish I could get someone into Dakor.
The monastery?
Yes, Ebentio said. We know what the other monasteries do. Wrathbor trains assassins, Fjeldor spies, and most of the others simple warriors. Dakor, however, worries me. I've heard some horrible stories about that monastery, and I can't fathom why anyone, even the Dorethi, would do such things.
Does it look like Fjordan's massing for war?
I can't tell. It doesn't appear so, but who knows? Wyrn could send a multi-nation army in our direction at almost a moment's notice. One small consolation is, I don't think he knows we understand that fact. Unfortunately, the knowledge does put me in a difficult position.
What do you mean? Her father's voice was hesitant.
If Wyrn declares holy war on us, then it will mean the end of Teode. We can't stand against the united might of the eastern countries, Ean.
I will not sit back and watch my people be slaughtered.
You would consider surrendering? Serene asked without